And now you're on a different mission. You're working, understand, with some vets on some very serious issues. So can you tell us about that a little bit?
Well, the scars of war, I think there was a man named Plato who was an ancient philosopher, said, only those who die in war do not suffer from war. I was 19, 20, 21 years old, been in combat, saw the remnants of 28,000 people, flew with 16 guys who didn't come back, and I came home and I was a basket case. I didn't know who I was. I flew with the Air National Guard of New Jersey, and I was looking for people to kill because it wasn't an airplane I was flying, it was a weapon that I was flying. And I became addicted to an activity that was like killing to me. I couldn't go to work. I just couldn't do anything that was what we would call a normal life. Although I met my wife Helene on a blind date in Good Friday, 1949. We got married in October 1949. So you're a little off by 4 years. It'll be 65 years this year in October. And I played golf to kill a golf course, to kill the guys I played against. I wasn't a very nice guy. I gambled. And then in 1975, my wife saw Maharishi Mahesh Yogi on television talking about transcendental meditation. And she learned TM. And then in self-defense, I learned transcendental meditation, got my life back. So I'm the national spokesman for TM for veterans, teaching TM for $720 to any veteran of any war, $360 for their family, $360 for their children. Our federal government today is spending $4 to $5 billion a month for antisuppressant and antipsychotic drugs that sometimes work, but more often than not causes more problems than others. So I'm the national spokesman for that. That came about because a young friend of mine in 2010 was a veteran of Bosnia. While he was in Bosnia, he was on patrol with another guy, and he saw a sniper in a window of a building, and he put his rifle up to shoot him, and he froze on the target. He just couldn't shoot another human being. And the sniper got off a shot and killed his best buddy standing next to him. And he came back, and he was a basket case. He started to drink and did drugs, and then became a drug dealer. He got divorced from his lovely family, and in 2010, he put a gun to his head in front of his mother's house and killed himself. I sort of felt guilty because I never talked about transcendental meditation for him. I'm also the national spokesman for Spirit of 45 Day. You might not know it, but in 2010, Susan Collins, the senator from Maine, Senator Dan Inouye from Hawaii, and Senator Frank Lautenberg from New Jersey had Congress pass unanimously the second Sunday in August to be known as Spirit of 45 Day, a day of remembrance of the 16.2 million veterans who served. So I'm a chairman of a committee that includes a lot of people here that will fly their warbird on August 14, 15, and 16, 2015, to commemorate the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. You can look that up at spiritof45.org. Does that answer your question, Dan?
Absolutely, and thank you for your service again. I mean, you're still serving us, and very well, I might add. Tell us a little bit more about this TM. Are you going into sort of a trance, or how does it work?
Well, it's a 5,000-year-old tradition. You don't have to change your clothes or change your religion. It's not what you think. It's how the brain functions. You learn to hear a sound and how to use that sound to transcend, to go beyond yourself, go into a deep silence. I think the best way to describe it is if you look at the ocean, you see the waves of the ocean, you go down 30 feet, there's a stillness. And that stillness that we can attain by learning transcendental meditation, learning how to use your brain to get into the zone of life. It gives us 20 minutes of rest that lets like 3-4 hours of sleep twice a day. It revives us, and it works. It absolutely works.
That's pretty interesting. I tell you, I went to Vietnam many times, and I don't remember exactly how many, but I never spent the night there. But I have my Vietnam service ribbon because all is required is that you set foot on soil of a war zone. And my loadmaster came up to me one day in Tan Son Nhut, which is used to be Saigon, and he said, "Danny, you're not going to like our cargo today." I said, "Leo was a guy, was a friend of mine." I said, "What is it, Leo?" He said, "150 body bags in plastic containers, and we have an honor guard, and we have an MP or AP attachment with two military police jeeps, and another bugler." And I said, "Where are we going?" He said, "Clark," and that was only about a four-hour flight, so I was very happy of that. And Jerry, once they put those guys on board, I couldn't go down there and look at them again. It was just, it's too much. So the scars are still there, my friend.
In 1932, when I was 8 years old, President Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected the President of the United States. And he was the only president that I knew until the spring of 1945 when he died. And in January of 1941, before his inauguration, he spoke in a speech about the four freedoms of America. It's known as the Four Freedoms Speech. If you've never heard it or never read it, it's worthwhile looking up on Google. The first freedom of America, as defined by the Constitution, is the freedom of speech and the freedom of expression. The second freedom is the freedom of worship all over the world, for any god that you choose, for any religion that you choose. And the third freedom was the freedom from want. We should all be able to make a living, we should all be able to help ourselves, and there shouldn't be any anger in what we do. And the fourth freedom was the freedom from fear, the freedom of fear of being attacked by other countries, and the freedom from fear of having our country do anything to other countries. And that's what democracy was as I grew up. And that's why I was willing to give my life to fight for this country. We've reached a point in the world, right now, in the world, where we can do what is known as the sixth extinction. I'm reading a book by a lady by the name of Horvath, Elizabeth Horvath, called The Sixth Extinction. 95% of everything that has ever lived on our planet has been destroyed in natural disasters, the destruction by nature. And the sixth extinction is being brought about by mankind, humankind. I remember hearing Jacques Cousteau, who was an oceanographer, when I was 30 years old, 60 years ago, speak about our planet. He said, "Our planet is like an airplane. Airplanes are held together by rivets. You can lose 5,000 rivets, or maybe 10,000 rivets in an airplane, or 50,000 rivets, but there's one rivet. If you lose that, the airplane's going to crash." Our planet is made up of rivets. Every living thing on this earth, worms and snakes and insects and birds and animals and human beings, are the rivets of the planet. And we as human beings do not know which one is the linchpin that when it becomes extinct, we become extinct, because the planet is going to not allow us to grow the food, feed the people. And we are at that point now. There's the animosity between people, between Hamas and Israel, between the Sunnis and the Shiites, between the Catholics and others. All of us are part of what goes on in the world, each and every one of us. I'm not a preacher. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a guy who fought for his country and would hate to see my grandchildren not have a world to live in. Thank you.